from 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180. Queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Today live from Edley's Barbecue, Sylvan Park. $5 breakfast tacos available. $4 Edley's Best Beer available all day. Located right across the street from Poncho and Lefty's Cantina. Edley'sBBQ.com for delivery options. It is time for the Ball Quest Hour. Each and every Friday at 11 a.m., we preview the upcoming matchup for the Tennessee Volunteers and get the latest from the War Room at BallQuest.com. With Austin Price and Brent Hubbs, presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. From mortgages to auto loans to checking accounts, big or small, they do it all. Visit Old Hickory Credit Union online, ohcu.org. Guys, hope you're doing well. We have had our days of doubt, but Brent Hubbs, SEC football is here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the commissioner's still holding his breath for a few more hours, but, planes are departing to visit for visiting teams to venues, and final testing numbers rolling in this morning and today, and we're going to play football tomorrow. And I think many of us wondered if this day would come in the SEC, but a credit to, and look, Commissioner Sankey is going to get a lot of credit for this, and he deserves credit for his patience and some of the things he did. You better be giving some credit to the university presidents and chancellors, because the big reason why the Big Ten was in the shape it was in wasn't because Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, said, hey, I don't want to play football, or this is my policy, this is what I'm doing. That league voted among their presidents to not play football. Now, they backtracked, but the SEC presidents were steadfast from the get-go of, hey, let's figure out a way to play. Let's do whatever we can, exhaust all of our possibilities to play football. And because of that commitment, it allowed the commissioner and his office to put in the protocols to show the patience and have the patience they need to get to the point we are today, and that's football tomorrow in the SEC.
Speaking of the planes taking off, was Cade Mays on the flight for Tennessee?
Well, they've not taken off yet, and I believe he will be on the flight to South Carolina. Whether he has been, whether Greg Sankey has given him the green light or the red light or whatever, I think he's going to be on the flight to Columbia.
I think it's a great PR move by Tennessee, because here's the thing. He's either going to be on the field in pads playing, or he's going to be roaming the sidelines, where your sideline reporter is going to give a hit over the fact that Greg Sankey's not made a decision. Your color commentator is going to make a comment over the fact that this kid's waiting in limbo and hasn't seen. I think it's a smart move from Tennessee's standpoint, from a PR standpoint, to continue the narrative out there that this young man's being held up, that, you know, that he's in limbo on whether he's going to get to play or not, because the league office won't go on and listen to an appeal and make a decision, or he's going to be on the field playing. I think this is a smart move by Jeremy Pruitt to have him front and center on the sidelines on Saturday.
Isn't it, though, guys, an awkward position from the SEC with what Greg Sankey said publicly in that interview in Birmingham, where essentially he's just saying, I don't know why people are looking at me. It's the schools that voted this rule in, and that rule still exists. And it's the coaches that are allowing players to come on their campus knowing that rule is in place. It seems like there's a lot of passing the buck, but yet Greg Sankey, I guess, does have ultimate authority to hear the appeal and rule one way or the other on all three of these athletes, one at Ole Miss, one at Kentucky, and one at Tennessee, that have transferred from a different school in the conference.
Oh, it's 100% passing the buck, Brent. And you know, when you look at the fact that, you know, again, eligibility doesn't matter, it's incredibly weak to hide behind this rule that, you know, as we talked about last night privately, that was set forth by, you know, chancellors and ADs. I mean, so many of those people that were in those same positions when the rule was voted on aren't there now. And so I just think when you know, and Commissioner Sankey's been on the record at talking about the one-time transfer waiver is coming, how can you in good conscience not let kids play when eligibility doesn't matter? You'll never understand. I'll never understand the end game of this.
Yeah, I don't know the end game either, Austin. I think the other thing that's interesting is how are you going to sit there and say it's all about student athletes and the health and the welfare of student athletes? And hey, it's okay if you transfer from Florida State. It's okay if you transfer from USC or from Wake Forest or wherever, That's good for the health and welfare of the student athlete to transfer into the SEC. That's good for the schools to transfer into the SEC. But if you're going to transfer within the conference, if you're going to go from the Eastern Division to the Western Division, you know, that's not good. That's bad. Here's the other thing too. If I'm not mistaken, the commissioner ruled on some waivers regarding grad transfers eligibility. When the league said that was not going to happen, he ruled on some of those, and then they changed the rule. I don't think they changed the rule on grad transfers and said, oh, it's open to everybody. I think he ruled, if I'm not mistaken, on some grad transfers individual eligibility in individual cases before the rule was changed. He's the commissioner of the league. Yes, the rule's in place, but I think you can alter that rule. We've got Zooms. You can have as many meetings as you want to have if you want to address that rule and go forth. Here's the thing, too, and it's kind of my last deal on this. And then, Paul, I think you've probably got a question as well. But my takeaway on this is, look, Cade Mays is only known for 10 days, his ruling from the NCAA. The Gatewood kid at Kentucky has known his ruling from the NCAA for nearly a month. And Otis Reese, who's transferring to Ole Miss, has known his waiver has been approved by the NCAA for nearly a month. You've had a month to make this decision. Why are we having this discussion, particularly for those two kids, on Friday about whether or not they're going to play or you're going to travel them or you're not going to travel them? You've had a month to make that ruling if you're Greg Sankey, okay? You can deny the waiver if you want to. That's your right, and that's the thing. Or you can come out and say, hey, I'm not going to listen to the waiver. The rule is the rule. But we're sitting here on Friday, and all three of those kids with a game tomorrow don't know what their ruling is at this point from the commissioner's office.
Is that what we're interpreting him having said? That, hey, the rule's on the books. It doesn't call for an interpretation by me. It stands as it is. And if that's what the interpretation is, then shouldn't he have at least said that more strongly?
I agree. I think that he should have come out and just said, yes, they can play, or no, they can't play. Leaving the kids dangling on the flagpole the day before the game is just wrong. It's wrong. We've seen when people in general, but specifically in this instance, when a commissioner or a chancellor or a president or whoever wants to get something done, they can get something done. So you've had several days, or as Brent just noted with other kids, weeks or a month to figure it out. And to have no resolution on this is just wrong. It's simply wrong. And it's not, again, it's not a Cade Mays thing. It's an every player that's trying to transfer and get eligibility thing.
Paul, to your point, I think that the commissioner said on the interview with JOX in Birmingham, or maybe it was on the SEC teleconference, something to the effect of, you know, I don't know why everybody's talking about waivers. This is not a waiver issue. There's a rule there. Okay, well then say it more clearly. They're not going to play because the rule. If it's not a waiver issue, why are you letting them file a waiver? Why are you going to listen to the waiver? That's the part that's a little bit confusing. And look, Greg Sankey is getting victory laps for saving football from a lot of people around the country. And look, he did a great job. I think he's done a really good job managing this conference through COVID. But the one thing that got Kevin Warren in trouble in the Big Ten and got him sideways with some people was Ohio State and those schools wanted to know, just tell us why we're not going to play. I think in this case, the commissioner's hurting himself and the commissioner's office is hurting themselves by just not making a ruling, not saying why definitively one way or the other. I think that's a mistake they're making.
Tennessee will play an actual football game tomorrow. We've made it to the finish line. We've got a game to preview. So when we come back, we're going to preview that game. We're going to talk about the matchup between Tennessee and South Carolina, also opening up the phone lines for your questions. We've got an entire hour, a power hour, with VolQuest, Brent Hubbs, and Austin Price, and they can take your phone call. 615-737-1045, 737-1045.
And it's all presented by Old Hickory Credit Union, from mortgages to auto loans to checking accounts, big or small. They do it all. You can visit Old Hickory Credit Union online, OHCU.org. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
SEC football is coming. Vols football is coming. And it all kicks off September 26th on your home for the Vols and the best SEC football coverage. 104.5 The Zone.
So tell me who I see.
Mid
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, live from Edley's Sylvan Park. Chad, look at the time. It's lunchtime.
It is lunchtime. It's beginning, I would say. 11 a.m. for some is lunch, right? 11:21 a.m., it's getting about that time. Come join us at Edley's at Sylvan Park. We're going to be here until 1 o'clock. We'll stay a while after as well. We got some listeners here right now. Perfect setup. I just asked someone, is it going to be like this all day, or is the sun going to come out? And they said, it's going to be like this all day. I said, good, because I prefer darkness. I prefer overcast with my fall football conditions. I don't want the sun blaring in our eye. It is a perfect day at Edley's in Sylvan Park. Come join us. Have some of their great food here. We're going to be here until 1 o'clock. Great day to come out and grab lunch on this Friday.
It is the VolQuest Power Hour with Austin Price and Brent Hubbs, presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. They're online at ohcu.org. Brent, I'll start with you. And Austin, please chime in with the thought behind extending Jeremy Pruitt, how long they have been working on that contract extension, and why it was important for Philip Fulmer to get that done right now.
Well, they've been working on it since the bowl game, to be honest with you. And it was one of those deals where I think they were getting pretty close. And then the pandemic happened and COVID. And I don't think announcing a contract extension in the middle of that in March and April, when you're trying to figure out everything, it made a ton of sense. I think Philip Fulmer wanted to get this done to show the commitment. I think there was a thought, and Austin can chime in on this in a second. I think there was a thought that extending it for a couple of years is good for recruiting. From Jeremy Pruitt's standpoint, it wasn't about necessarily a raise. He was much more interested in the incentive part of it. If you go back and look at Rick Barnes's contract change when he flirted with UCLA, his bonus structure changed dramatically if they make the Final Four, the Elite Eight, all of those types of things. Jeremy Pruitt wanted a similar bonus structure. And if you look at the changes in his bonus structure, if he were to win a national championship, the bonus goes from his old contract of $500,000 to $1.5 million. If you make the playoff, it goes from $300,000 to $800,000. And now there's more incentives in for finishing in the top 10, top five, those types of things. So I think Jeremy Pruitt was wanting to bet on himself and wanted the bonus structure changed more than anything. Austin, I think Philip Fulmer felt like long-term that they needed to show a commitment and extend that out to 5 years for recruiting, and he wanted to give him a financial bump as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that that's been a little bit of an issue with some recruits who look at the fact that Coach Pruitt had not got an extension. And that's something he's had to kind of, you know, talk with them about at different times throughout the last few months, is, you know, when a 2022 kid or even a 2021 or is looking at Tennessee, hey, well, you know, you've only got 3 years left, you know, and that's something that, you know, other schools use against Tennessee, or, you know, at least make you know, prospects more aware of such a thing. And some kids, you know, do listen to that kind of thing and worry about it. So, you know, I think from a recruiting standpoint, you know, this makes a ton of sense. And again, as Brent said, Coach Pruitt betting on himself, probably could have got a little bit more money in the raise factor, but would rather take less and get more kind of an incentive base where if we win, I win, everybody wins, more so than just, hey, give me more money.
Oh, it's the biz. I know it's the business, but I know I'm not a fan of this element of the business. Would you agree with the idea that the business is broken in this regard, where you make moderate gains and you get an extension to keep up with the Joneses? That's an extension beyond already a pre-existing pretty good cushion.
Well, I think, you know, if you were going to look at it from a pure business standpoint and you weren't worried about keeping up with the Joneses and the perception of it and those type of things, you would have a smaller base, you would have more incentives. And look, if you didn't meet some incentives, maybe you didn't get fired, but you took a pay cut. Okay. But nobody's going to do that. This is the game that the agents have created out there. This is the game that particularly in the SEC, everybody's willing to pay. I mean, you look at this situation with Jeremy Pruitt, he gets a $400,000 raise. Okay. He's not taking it this year, but in February he gets a $200,000 retention bonus, and then he gets the $400,000 raise. And the buyout doesn't change on either end. And so I just think that's the world we're in. I think that's why you have college football programs right now talking about $100 million losses. I think that's why Ohio State is talking about laying off people and furloughing. And I think you're seeing programs around the country and departments around the country laying off people because the pandemic has burst the balloon a little bit, but because there's not enough money there. Now, are all these coaches going to take pay cuts? Probably not. But you're going to have to make cuts somewhere. And I just think that's where the business has gotten out of hand. You can trace it back probably to Nick Saban with the salary that he got into and the money he got there. And, you know, everybody's trying to move forward with it. I mean, 22 years ago, Philip Fulmer wasn't making $1 million a year and he won a national title. But, you know, you get $4 million a year to go to a bowl game, it seems like.
I think that's just sports in general, though. I mean, like, you know, when you look at, like, the career earnings leaders on the PGA Tour, like, you know, the greats of the game aren't on that because they played, you know, 30 or 40 years ago. But you got some guys that are won four or five PGA Tour events that have made millions and millions and millions of dollars because Tiger Woods. And, you know, same thing with other sports. Basketball's making a ton of money. Baseball's making a ton of money.
Austin Price and Brent Hubbs. It's the VolQuest Power Hour presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. OHCU.org is the website. We are live from Edley's Barbecue, Sylvan Park, and we welcome your phone calls for Austin and Brent. 615-737-1045, our number, 737-1045. It is time to preview Tennessee and South Carolina.
And I'm going to start with Brent on this one. When you think about Will Muschamp, you think about defense first and foremost. And I think the common perception would be they're going to be very stingy defensively. That has really not been the case the last couple of outings against Tennessee with South Carolina. Tennessee has found a lot of success with Jarrett Garantano at quarterback against the Gamecocks. When you guys dive deeper into the numbers from that South Carolina defense a year ago, what did you find with them defensively and then what they have coming back this season? Let's start with Brent.
Well, I think the first thing, you go back to last year, I think Tennessee did a great job with Kinlaw last year and neutralizing him. South Carolina built so much of their defense off of those two guys on the defensive front, Wernham and Kinlaw, to get to the quarterback. And Tennessee neutralized that a great deal last year. They were trying to protect, I think, some youth in the secondary, so maybe they weren't as aggressive in terms of blitzing from different places. And Jarrett's played well against South Carolina his entire career for whatever reason. He's had a pretty good feel for maybe their tendencies or what they like to do. When I look at this South Carolina defense this year, I like them at corner. I think their corners are pretty good. I think their corners will be aggressive. And I think Will Muschamp will trust their corners, particularly J.C. Horn, more this year than he did a year ago because those guys have more experience. What I wonder about South Carolina is on the defensive front, that they lost a lot of production. With Kinlaw and Wernham leaving, and they're bringing back some experience. They're going to start a senior, two seniors, I think, and two juniors. But behind them, you got three freshmen, and you're going to rotate players in the game. You're not going to just play four defensive linemen. So I wonder if Tennessee can have some success against the South Carolina defensive front that's not as deep and is not as experienced as it was a year ago. And they ran for 140, 138, 140 yards a year ago, in a game where Gray was not a factor at all. So I think Tennessee has a chance to be successful on the ground against the South Carolina defense this year, which would open up the play-action passing game, which lends more to how Jim Chaney wants to play offensive football.
Yeah, South Carolina's corners are super aggressive because they are talented, and thus, you know, double moves. Tennessee's, I think, overall speed at wide receiver has gotten so much better than a year ago. I really expect, and I know we've talked about him all offseason, but I really expect Jalen Hyatt to have a big part in this game. Now, does that equate to success? Not necessarily, but I think they will try to get him the ball in space and let him go to work with his speed a good portion of the night.
Who do you think gets more carries for Tennessee tomorrow?
I think Austin will end up being Eric Gray. Maybe more touches. I don't know about carries, but I think more touches offensively between Gray and Chandler will end up being Gray because of his involvement in the passing game. I think both will play. If one of them is hot, they'll ride that hot hand a bit. What I'm really interested to see out of the backfield is, do they play both of them together? And how much do they play Chandler and Gray on the field together? Because I think that could be a unique element if Tennessee gets into that part of a game plan tomorrow night, because I'm intrigued by seeing those two guys on the field together with the way the game has exploded in an open space game for running backs.
I'm intrigued just to see the first play of the game, Brant, because the last 2 years it's been a thrill a minute, the first two plays of the last two seasons. I'm going to go with just a simple Ty Chandler run off tackle.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to the opener against West Virginia and Charlotte, and there was a complete bust in the guard center gap, and I think that was a 7-yard loss where Garantano got just absolutely obliterated.
He got ear-holed
bad. And then last year, it was not a Sunday afternoon hop to Ty Chandler on a swing pass. It was a hard bounce at the knees that ended up being an interception. It was an ugly start that way. So, yeah, you're probably right. You want to try to get off to something simple to get settled into second down. Maybe make second down somewhat less than a negative, or make first down a positive play in some way instead of a turnover, a minus 7 like it's been the last 2 years.
Got to find a way to get Garantano some confidence early. I mean, that's the key here, the first couple of possessions. How do they find that outside of the run game? How do they find that for their quarterback who, generally speaking, we kind of know whether or not he's on or not? And he's usually on against South Carolina.
Well, look, if you're a senior quarterback with as much experience as he's has, with everything around him returning that he has, man, he's got to have some confidence just going out there himself. I mean, surely he doesn't need a 4-for-5 start to go, hey, I can play. Hey, I'm good enough to play here. I mean, the guy's played a lot of football. He's had success against them. He knows this system better than he's ever known a system since he's been at Tennessee. He's bringing back multiple starters on the offensive line that should have some experience. He's got two tailbacks he can involve in the passing game and obviously in the run game. And he's got speed at receiver that he didn't have. Now, he doesn't have the security blanket of Juwan Jennings, but, you know, what you hope is that you don't have to sit there if you're Jim Chaney and script, okay, let's make sure we get a positive play for Jared so that he's not in the tank after the first series here. Because this is not a freshman quarterback anymore who you're worried about being mentally fragile. This guy started, benched, ripped, injured, and still finished the season playing quarterback. So surely he's got enough mental toughness that you don't have to script it all for him to get off to some great start to get moving forward.
I'm curious in regards to that, because I'm with you, Brent. I don't know that. And also, it hasn't really worked out. They designed a play a year ago that you mentioned that's a simple swing pass that he bullets at the knees of Ty Chandler, and it's an interception for Georgia State. So I don't know if that's the route. What if they just let him take shots early? Now, what if there's some one-on-one shots deep down the field to try to get him some confidence and get him going early in the game? Do you think that's an option for Tennessee?
Well, I'll go back. Go ahead, Austin.
I think that the Tennessee will try to stretch the field early, because I think that only loosens up the South Carolina defense even more. And I think that the notion going into this game is Tennessee's going to try to use their bigger, experienced offensive line against some smaller South Carolina defensive linemen and run the football. And that might be the case, but I think one way to kind of throw that notion off is to take a couple of shots early. I also like the use of Princeton Fant. I mean, they're not going to throw it to him a ton, but, you know, early on in the game, a scripted, you know, play to somebody that nobody really knows might work pretty well.
Jim Chaney loves the sluggo. I mean, a stutter go is one of his favorite plays. It always has been. Austin just mentioned the aggressive corners from South Carolina. Can you get one of those young receivers, or can you get a Josh Palmer, you know, to give a little hitch look and do a stutter go or a stop and go type deal? And maybe just let Jared air it out. You know, I go back to the 2000 in Alabama game where Casey Clawson got his first start, and everybody assumed it was going to be off tackle to Travis Henry because they had to get Casey comfortable and settled into the game. And all they did was drop back and throw it. And they happened to complete that one for about a 40-yard gain. And everybody in the crowd went, whoa, we're going to play football today. You know, we're going to go out and be aggressive. So maybe that is an early play from Jim Chaney coming into this deal. Because, look, trying to be conservative 2 years ago in the run game was a disaster. Last year, trying to help him with an easy throw was a disaster. So maybe you just let him air it out.
What does the rotation look like at wide receiver tomorrow night? How many players do you think rotate in? And who are the first few we'll see out there on the field?
Well, I think definitely Josh Palmer, Cedric Tillman, Velus Jones, you know, Ramel Keaton. Those are kind of maybe the kind of the top four. But you're going to see a really steady dose of Jalin Hyatt. You're going to see Malachi Wideman. I think especially once you cross the 50, I think Wideman will get a lot of his reps, you know, in South Carolina territory just because he is such a jump ball machine. The closer you get to the goal line, the more you can use that to your advantage. So I think Tennessee probably plays, what, 7-8 receivers tomorrow night, and real, you know, it probably is realistic against South Carolina.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, Hyatt probably has the biggest package game plan wise going into this game, because I think he's the more polished, more ready receiver ready. Not saying he's the most talented. He is very talented, but I think he's the more ready guy to play, can probably handle more. I think Wideman's stuff would be a little bit more limited. It may be the same three or four routes out of three or four different formations. And that's what he does to kind of help him get into the game. Jim Chaney has a history of that's how he kind of gets receivers going early in their career. I think you'll see that with even a guy like Holiday. You know, maybe they've got two or three wrinkles in that are just Jimmy Holiday wrinkles that they'll sprinkle in somewhere along the way. But I think, Austin, you're right. They're going to play a ton of guys. I think they're going to play a ton of guys all over the field. And Chad and Jonathan and Paul, I think you have to do that for a couple of reasons. One, you're not real sure what your conditioning is going to be because you haven't had the camp grind where you've gone 4 or 5 days in a row because it's been such an extended camp with these built-in off days. You haven't had that true put the ball down in scrimmage 130 plays or whatever. You've had to be limited there. And you don't know what your testing numbers are going to look like from week to week, okay? So what you don't want to do is you don't want to say, okay, here's our best 22, right? And then all of a sudden next week, six of those 22 aren't on the field and you didn't play anybody to get ready in case you didn't have them available. So I think you're going to see Tennessee play multiple people on the offensive line, a lot of receivers, multiple tight ends, and I think you'll see them rotate heavy on the defensive side of the ball as well, just to get experience because this is a marathon, not just a sprint tomorrow night.
Well, we don't have to worry about going into tomorrow night. It shouldn't be cramping because while it's going to be about 81 degrees as the high tomorrow, that's not that hot. And, you know, Tennessee's been practicing in, you know, high 60s, low 70s for the last about 7 to 10 days. It'll be a little warmer tomorrow in Columbia, but, you know, playing more bodies shouldn't be because of cramping. It should be more just because of the rust and the conditioning factor from a standpoint of you don't know where you're at as a team.
When we come back, we'll preview Tennessee's defense versus the South Carolina offense. Also, something we haven't talked about yet that's been a big key for Tennessee the last few years, the return game. Who's going to be returning punts and kicks for Tennessee tomorrow in Columbia, South Carolina? We'll discuss when we come back.
The VolQuest Power Hour with Austin Price and Brent Hubbs, presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. From mortgages to auto loans to checking accounts, big or small, they do it all. Visit Old Hickory Credit Union online, ohcu.org. This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, live in Sylvan Park today on 104.5 The Zone.
Tennessee football is back. The Vols open an all-SEC season on the road against the South Carolina Gamecocks.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
Bob Kesling has the call from Columbia tomorrow night at 6:30.
All the way to the checkerboard! Touchdown, Tennessee!
On your station for Vols football, 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. We continue with the VolQuest Power Hour, presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. They're online at ohcu.org. Brent Hubbs and Austin Price with us from Knoxville.
Guys, the return game has been something that's been a plus for Tennessee in recent years. How do you see that shaking out this year, both kick return and punt return?
If I were a betting man, I would take Velus Jones to return kicks, and I don't think they'll – it'll be to me like a deep man than a medium deep man. Like where in years past, it's kind of been Marquez and Ty Chandler both back deep, and one right, one left. I think Velus will be the deep guy. I don't think Ty Chandler will be on kickoffs this year. Just can't, you know, worry about him getting hit on a kickoff return just because guys are, you know, coming down at such a rate of speed. They need him at running back. And then punts, I think it's going to be Eric Gray. I think Eric Gray returns punts coming up tomorrow night.
Do you see the same thing, Brent?
I would be a little hesitant to put Eric Gray back there just because of the lack of depth that you have at running back. I know you can't play scared, so I don't mean to imply that, but
I think if it was kickoffs, I think you're 100% right. I think that it gives them a little less pause because it's punts.
Yeah. So what, I mean, I could see Velus Jones also being in a punt return game. I don't know that they'll be ready to put a freshman back there. Could be Bryce Thompson, but it may very well be Eric Gray. Look, he's terrific in space. And you know, he was smart, make good decisions. It's one of those deals where it's like, do you take a chance because you think he's going to be such a big offensive weapon for you and you don't have depth in that running back room? I definitely wouldn't put either one of the running backs on kickoffs. But if they want to, put Gray back there for punt, he probably can make some plays back there. But I would run away from them being on the kickoff teams.
We know Pruitt's not very high on this defensive front. He's made that clear several times with this defensive line. We also know he likes to be aggressive defensively, and they should have success against Colin Hill. He's not going to run around. Austin, I know you've pointed out with us he's had, two or three knee injuries. That should be a recipe for a quarterback that's going to stand there and deliver the football, which should make things easier for a front that is trying to get things going and kickstart things in week one.
Yeah, in my opinion, they've got to get to him early, and that means if you have to scheme it up to bring pressure from different angles, get to him early, get him rattled, and and then go from there. I just would not let him get into any kind of rhythm. And if that means putting your corners on an island, that means putting your corners on an island. And don't bet against those corner blitzes. Jeremy Pruitt and Derek Ansley love to bring pressure from the boundary.
Well, and the other thing about this game is it's kind of like the scene out of Varsity Blues when they go to the oop-de-oop and there's five guys out there and the guys in the crowd counting the number of receivers. You're not going to count that from South Carolina, but people are going to look out
there.
They
don't have five receivers, Brent.
But they're going to look out there and go, is that a fullback on the field? Like a real fullback with his hand on the ground in front of a running back? They're going to play some I formation football. It's not going to be about zone read. It's going to be about trying to run downhill in the run game and create a play-action pass game is what they're going to try to do. It's a little bit of a throwback football offensively from what you see in this day and age, and that should allow Tennessee to have a chance to not worry as much about outside containment on the quarterback and kind of pin their ears back on third down and get after the guy. And Tennessee needs to have success doing that.
And to that point, and Austin, you bringing up their rotation at receiver – South Carolina has had plenty of marquee talent at receiver over the years. They do not have that player this year.
Well, Alshon Jeffery, no Pharaoh Cooper, no Debo Samuel. They don't have that. They're relying on some inexperienced guys, some older guys that have not done a whole lot, a true freshman in Ja'Kari Caldwell. They got a quarterback that's over there as a backup wide receiver. I mean, Colin Hill may have a talented arm and be a confident guy, but you still got to be able to get open. In Tennessee's secondary, Bryce Thompson going to play motivated going into Williams-Brice Stadium. Don't think that's not going to be a big deal for him. And then obviously Alante Taylor's looking for that bounce back year after he did not play very well last year, Brent, but then kind of bounced back late in the year and played some of his better football last year near the tail end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they scare you. Now, they may. I mean, Caldwell might get behind you, and they may end up having some playmakers there. Shy Smith's been around for a while, hasn't made a ton of plays. I think the thing South Carolina fans are wondering tonight and today is, what's our offensive identity? What are you? What are they going to be? They've had a running back competition. They're going to play three running backs, I think, in the first half of this game. They're still not settled at right tackle. And who they're going to start there. They're not proven at the receiver spot. So I think that affords, and one would think that would allow Tennessee to be really aggressive. Jeremy Pruitt's not been happy with the defensive front. You wonder if some of that's a little bit of motivation as well, because I think Aubrey Solomon was a little slow to get going. Middleton's had some COVID issues. There's been some rumblings and rumors about him. Here's the other thing too. Maybe the offensive line's pretty good. And maybe the defensive front's played a little better than you think. You don't know. I mean, I watched in 19, and this team's not going to win a national title. I don't mean that. But in 98, T. Martin couldn't make a first down. And everybody thought, this is the worst offense in the history of man now that Peyton Manning's gone. They go to Syracuse score over 30 points, which was a head scratcher. And as we learned during that season, Tennessee's defensive front was as good as we've seen Tennessee have in a defensive front. I'm not saying this is the greatest offensive line ever, but maybe they're part of the reason why the defensive front hasn't been terrific in fall camp.
We discussed this earlier in the week. First year, first game is a, you know, jumble. Second year, first game was a disaster. What's the fair expectation for Pruitt? Third year, first game, preparation-wise, can't see 12 men on the field and stuff like that this time around.
I think you better be clean. You know, getting off to a slow start this year is really not an option, because if you don't win this game against South Carolina, the year you want to have is probably unattainable, or you're going to be fighting uphill so much all year long that it may hurt you in another game. So I think if you can win this game, all of a sudden it changes things. So you got to play clean. I think that having Jim Chaney and Derek Ansley back, you know, you've had some change at some position coaches, but your coordinators are back. Your quarterback's back. You got the offensive line that we just touched on, and you've got most of your defense back, including a kid that's a sophomore who, you know, probably your best overall player, Brent. So the continuity and experience are back at some really key spots.
Well, and Paul, to jump on that question and to answer that question as well, listen, with the experience that you have coming back, your operation needs to be pretty well oiled. Okay. I mean, there's no reason for delay game penalties. There's no reason to be late coming out of the huddle off the sideline. Look, you may not tackle well, okay, because it's first game and you haven't had your normal practice routine. Okay. Some of those things may show up, but there's not any reason for you to have operational issues when you have a quarterback who's played this much football, a defense that's got experience coming back at all levels, and an offense has got experience back coming back at all levels. So I think the start realistic expectation is you better not have confusion like you saw the first couple of years. It better be a much better operation than it's been the first couple of years.
Guys, who will we be talking about late Saturday night who no one really knows right now on this Tennessee roster? Who's most likely to be a player that fans go crazy about, that they learn about for the first time in Columbia?
Well, I think there's going to be somebody in the receiving corps is going to make a play that's going to go, okay, that guy's really talented. He's really good. A guy I've been talking about that Austin's laughed at me about for 3 weeks now is DeAndre Johnson. Tennessee needs a pass rush guy. I think DeAndre Johnson on third and obvious passing situations has a chance to be effective in this game. I don't think that means he's the next Derek Barnett or he's this, that, or the other, but I think this is a game that can suit him because, as we talked about earlier, Colin Hill's not a mobile guy. He's had three knee surgeries. So I think if you're a defensive end coming off the edge, you're not worried about, you know, playing the contain game as much. You're going see ball, hit ball straight after the quarterback. I think that plays into DeAndre Johnson's hands. So I think he's a guy that people are going to say at the end of this game, hey, maybe he can help more than we thought he could.
I'm going to go out and say on defense, I'm going to go Jeremy Banks. I think he's going to make two or three plays where you go, whoa. Now he may have two or three plays where the band's playing on the other side, but he's going to have two or three plays that go, whoa. And then offensively, I'm going to go Cedric Tillman. I mean, he's had too much praise from people around the program in fall camp to just kind of, you know, disappear to the shadows.
And we went the entire hour and didn't hear his name. I may have missed it. Henry To'oto'o. I know he's a well-known player. Is he the best player on the field Saturday night?
Yes.
I mean, Trey Smith's really, you know, for Tennessee, I think Trey Smith's a good player. But in terms of what fans are going to see and what you recognize and what you understand, you know, in terms of making plays, yes, he's the best player on the field. I think fans are going to be really excited to see, you know, the 2.0 version of him. He's leaner, but he's stronger. I think he's going to be much better in open space. A year ago, think about what they asked him to do in the first game. No Batuli. Hey, by the way, freshman, you run the entire defense. And he struggled some against covering tight ends and covering backs in open space. I think he got better at it all year long. I think he'll be much better at it on Saturday night. So, yeah, I think he's arguably Tennessee's best player, and he will be the face of this program as Trey Smith leaves.
Austin, do you and Brent have your picks in at volquest.com yet, or is that still to come today?
If Brent didn't turn it loose in the last 20 minutes, then I'll turn it loose right now.
They're ready. I didn't turn them loose, so we can answer that question. All right, you got it?
Yes, I'm turning them loose right now. Brent, go ahead and give your pick there.
I got Tennessee winning in this game. I think I picked it 24-17 is what I've got to pick in this game. I like Tennessee in the line of scrimmage, you know, matching up in this game. I think there'll be some sloppiness tackling-wise. There'll be some ugliness from here and there. I think, you know, somebody will pop a big play because of a mental mistake or something like that. But I think in the end, I think Tennessee's got more experience. I think they have more of an identity on both sides of the ball. And I think Tennessee's better in the line of scrimmage.
24. And so I just think Tennessee's offensively going to be able to make more plays. And I don't think South Carolina offensively is, you know, I just don't think they have enough playmakers. Colin Hill may be a good, solid quarterback, but I just don't think he's got the pieces around him. And I think Tennessee will be able to get home. And this, again, I think this whole season benefits road teams. Point blank.
Hit the score one more time, Austin. We missed it.
34-24.
10-point advantage there for Tennessee over South Carolina for Austin Price. Guys, it was a fast-paced hour. I went by, and we will have the podcast available immediately, by the way, for the VolQuest Hour. You can also find that at volquest.com. Full game day coverage tomorrow at their site as well. Thank you, guys, and we'll recap this next week.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend, everybody.
The VolQuest Hour, presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. From mortgages to auto loans, checking accounts, big or small, they do it all. Visit Old Hickory Credit Union online, ohcu.org.
Through three games, something the Titans have been missing that we have not discussed enough. Coming up next.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Fall for Life, Ramon Foster has brought his 11-year NFL career to 104.5 The Zone.
And I'm just going to take a wild guess that his NFL Rolodex is bigger than yours.
Get J-Mark and Ramon Foster Monday morning from 6 to 9 on 104.5 The Zone.